Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy brought to you every Friday night here on KCRW. And this week and next week, we're going to be listening to British rarities. You know, you've heard all the Python stuff and the Peter Cook and Dudley Moore stuff, and I play that stuff a lot, and it's pretty readily available. But for the next 2 weeks, we'll be listening to some things that are rare, if not impossible to find, and that hold up quite well in addition to their historical significance. We're going to start off with a piece by Cambridge Circus from 1963. This was a group featuring John Cleese and Tim Brooke Taylor and Bill Oddie, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, Chris Stewart Clark, and Anthony Buffery, all Cambridge undergraduates. And this was the Undergraduate Review from Cambridge, which the Footlights Show, which came over to the United States and appeared very briefly on Broadway. This piece is a courtroom piece. It's a fairly long piece, and it's a real precursor to some of the courtroom pieces that Python later went on to do, which were coincidentally also written by John Cleese. Depending upon how much there's time for, either this week or next week, we'll hear maybe one or two excerpts from a radio program called I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, which also featured some of the same people, John Cleese, Bill Oddie, Joe Kendall, David Hatch, Tim Brooke Taylor. Yeah, actually, it's almost exactly the same cast. We will hear a piece that John Cleese recorded specifically for us during the last time he was in the studios, and it's a very old piece that he wrote for David Frost to do. He didn't write that. David Frost ended up recording it, but it was a piece that was written, I guess, for his undergraduate days. We've got some Marty Feldman lined up, some rare Flanders and Swan. What else? I'm looking here in my bag. Billy Connolly, missed some rare Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, and whatever. But I'm taking up too much time already, so let's get on with, from 1963, the Cambridge Circus. Oh, by the way, there's a sight gag in this, which is a little, it's actually impossible to understand when you're just listening to it, but at one point they call a witness, and the point of it is that the witness is a midget. And the set was constructed such that there is like a barricade, and so all eyes followed this person who really wasn't there. And so they would call this witness, and they would just watch as they'd follow the progress of this midget. But, you know, that's just to let you know what's going on that you can't see. Anyhow, Cambridge Circus with John Cleese and a piece called Judge Not.
You are Arnold Fitch?
Definitely, yes.
You are hereby charged that on the 14th day of July, in the 1963rd year of our Lord, you did willfully, unlawfully, and with malice aforethought, assault one Sidney Bottle, a dwarf. How plead you, guilty or not guilty?
Definitely not guilty.
My lord, in this case, my learned friend, Mr. Mel Travers, appears for the defense, and I appear for the money. The case... the case would appear to be a simple one, my lord. The prosecution will endeavor to prove that the snivelling, depraved, cowardly wretch whom you see cowering before you returned home on the night of the 14th of July in a particularly vicious and unpleasant frame of mind, had words with his wife, and then deliberately assaulted his pet ostrich by throwing a watering can at it.
a watering can, my lad. A watering can, a large cylindrical tin-plated vessel with a perforated podding piece much used by the lower classes for the purpose of artificially moistening the surface soil.
Thank you, Mr. Barker. Your knowledge is inexhaustible.
You are very gracious, my lad, if I may continue.
The ostrich...
Sure. The ostrich, my lad, an ostrich, a large, hairy, flightless bird, resident in Africa, remarkable for its speed in running and much prized for its feathers.
A kind of kookaburra.
No, my lad.
The ostrich, taking fright, flew out of the window and landed on a passing ice cream cart.
Oh, that cart?
Ice cream cart, my lad. Ice cream, an artificial cream substitute, sweetened, flavoured and frozen, originally invented by the American Indians as an antidote to trench foot.
Oh, thank you, my lad, if I may be allowed to continue.
And landed on a passing ice cream cart, thereby causing a small dollop of ice cream...
A dollop!
I beg your pardon, my lad. I'm afraid I was trying to clear my throat. Thereby causing a small portion of ice cream to fall on the plaintiff, Mr. Sidney Buttle, a dwarf, who was hopping past at the time. Thereby soiling Mr. Buttle's new suit. Those, quite simply, are the facts of the case, my lad. A very straightforward one, as I think we will all agree. It would appear that the rule laid down in Pritchard against the East Halifax Fishbone Glue Manufacturing Company would apply.
Was that the case of the slug and the lemonade bottle, Mr. Bottle?
No, my lad. It was the case of the human cannonball and the kiwi.
Ah, that was the kookaburra.
No, my lad. I think his lordship is thinking of White against Phillips, Mr. Partey, the case of the aborigine who was about to launch his boomerang at a dingo that was chasing his kangaroo, had his attention distracted by a lunging kookaburra, causing him to release the boomerang which struck a passing cobber in the outback. An Australian case, my lad. Director? Of no fixed abode. You are also a music hall comedian.
Yes.
Are you married?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. My wife.
Will you, in your own words, please, Mr. Mola? In your own words, please, Mr. Mola, describe your wife to this court.
My wife, she's so fat. She's so fat that when she walks down the street, she looks like five dogs fighting in a sack. My wife, five dogs down the street.
Would I be correct in thinking that your wife has comparatively recently visited the West Indies?
Yes.
Jamaica.
Objection.
I'm sorry. I was born at first time. Mr. Mellor, did you meet your wife in a revolving door?
No, she went of her own accord. I thank you.
No. Now, listen very carefully to the question, please, Mr. Mellor. Now, did you meet your wife in a revolving door?
Ah, yes, and we've been going around together ever since we've been married.
Mr. Mola, I put it to you that your mother-in-law is bald.
I agree at once!
And would I be correct in thinking that I'll ask
objection, my homie learned friend is not going to leave.
I am not. Does your mother-in-law... Did your
mother-in-law... Test!
My learned friend is treating Mr. Mola like a half-witness.
This is quite intolerable! My learned friend is making a mockery of this courtroom! What is more, me learned friend is neither learned nor me friend.
And in future, madam, with your permission, I shall refer to him as me ignorant enemy.
Thank you.
Now, if me ignorant enemy will allow me to get a few words in edgeways.
What ways, Mr. Bartlett?
It's time you retired, my lad. Mr. Mola, what has happened? Mr. Mola, what has happened to your bald mother-in-law recently?
My bald mother-in-law, she's had rabbits tattooed on her head because at a distance they may look like hairs. Rabbits on her head because of this way of hair. Bunny rabbits.
Thank you, Mr. Mola.
Bunny rabbits.
Thank you, Mr. Mola. And did you then see the ostrich fly to the window and land on the passing ice cream cart, thereby causing a small dollop of ice cream to fall on the plate of Mr. Sidney Buttle, a dwarf who was hopping past at the time?
Yes!
No further questions. Just two questions, my lad, Mr. Mola.
No.
Does your house have a garden?
No, my house does definitely have a garden. My house has not a garden, Nick.
Do you see the accused?
Yes!
Does his house have a garden?
No, the accused's house does not have a garden, no.
In that case, would the accused be likely to have a spade?
No.
A scythe?
No.
A rake?
No.
Hoe?
No.
Trowel?
No.
Pitchfork?
No.
Pruning shears?
No.
Watering can?
Yes!
Damn!
further questions, Millard?
You may leave the court, Mr. Mola.
You're very kind, Millard. But before I go, I'd like to sing a very, very lovely old English ballad. A ballad entitled...
I don't wish to hear that. Would you kindly leave the court?
Very well, Millard.
Call Arnold Fitch.
Call Arnold Fitch!
You are Arnold Fitch,
alias... Arnold Fitch!
You are Arnold Fitch, alias...
Arnold Fitch!
It's perfectly all right, Mother. It's quite...
Arnold Fitch, alias Arnold Fitch?
Yes.
Then why is your alias the same as your real name?
Because when I do use my alias, no one will expect it to be the same as my real name.
You are a company director.
Of course.
Did you throw the watering can?
No.
I suggest that you threw the watering can.
I did not.
I put it to you that you threw the watering can.
I didn't.
I submit that you threw the watering can.
No.
Did you or did you not throw the watering can?
I did not.
Yes or no? Did you throw the watering can?
No.
Answer the question!
I didn't throw it.
So he denies it!
Very well. Would you be surprised to hear that you'd thrown the watering can?
Yes.
And do you deny not throwing the watering can?
Yes.
Ah!
No!
Very well, Mr. Fitch! No. I would have been true to say that you were lying if you denied that it was false to affirm, that it belied you to deny that it was untrue that you were lying.
Oh!
You hesitate, Mr. Fitch, to answer, please. The court is waiting. Yes!
No further questions, Millard.
Call Sydney Bottle. Just once.
Call Sydney Bottle! Just once!
You are, Sydney Butler, you are presumably a company director. You are also a dwarf. Now, will you tell the car, please, Mr. Butler, on the night of the 14th of July, as you returned from work, do you remember, as you passed the... Mr. Butler? Oh, there he is, Mr. Butler. Something to stand on, the lad, for the benefit of the jury. How nice to see you. Now, Mr. Bond, will you tell the court in your own words, of course, on the night in question, just exactly how drunk were you? Oh, come, Mr. Bottle. Surely I'm not going to try to pretend that you were sober. I have here, Mr. Bottle, conclusive proof that on the night in question you had consumed no less than 17 pink gins. Furthermore, Mr. Bottle, I put it to you that on the night you were well and truly stoned.
Oh, I'd love to be alone in the country.
John?
Yes?
I'm with you.
I'd love to be alone in the country.
But John, you brought me with you.
I didn't. You hid in the back.
But you must have noticed.
Not at all. It's a very large tandem.
But John, when we fell off going down the stairs, you must have seen me.
I thought you were a hitchhiker.
But I'm your wife. You must have recognized me.
I didn't, Mary.
Why not?
Well, because you were disguised as a cactus.
Oh, John. John. Talk to me. Say something to me. Say you hate me. Say I'm ugly.
Which?
Say I'm ugly.
You're ugly.
You're only saying that. You don't really mean it. You don't care. You never think about me. Up and down all night, warming the milk, mashing the rusks, all the crying and the bedwetting.
Yes, I know.
I wouldn't mind if we had a baby.
Well, I'm sorry, but I prefer bisons.
John, why don't you admit it? You don't love me anymore.
All right, I admit it.
John, once we had something that was pure and wonderful and good. What's happened to it?
You spent it all.
That's all that matters to you, isn't it? Money. I despise you. Do you hear me? I hate you. I don't know how I've been able to stand it. I suppose it's because I love you. I don't know. I do love you, John. I love you more than I can say. I need you, John. Please, John, don't look at photographs of nude women while I'm talking to you.
Oh, all right, but I know you know.
You know?
Yes.
Oh, God. John.
Yes?
What do you know?
Well, I could be wrong.
You mean about me and Nigel?
Oh, I was wrong. I thought it was Rupert.
You're right, it is Rupert. I can never remember names.
Anyway, I do know about last Friday.
Last Friday?
Yes. He was in my bed, wasn't he?
How did you know?
He kept pushing me out.
You mean you were there too?
You didn't even notice? Oh, God.
John, try to love me.
No, Mary, it's no good. You somehow manage to hurt everyone you love.
Well, I'll take the cactus skin off.
No, Mary, look. There's something I've been meaning to tell you.
What?
Cardinal Richelieu died in 1642.
All right, so Mother was wrong. Forget the past. I mean, that's all history now. Don't let's dig it up again.
You never liked me being an archaeologist, did you?
I never said that.
You'd have been happier if I'd sharpened knives or sold ferrets.
Keep George out of this.
No. I'm not going to keep George out of this. If you had to have a lover, why did it have to be a ferret seller? Blasted ferrets all over the house for months. Why couldn't it have been the budgerigar man? At least budgerigars can sing beautifully. I can still remember waking up in the morning and hearing all those ferrets singing. It used to drive me mad. Always the same tune.
Well, that's all over now. Can't we forget it? I mean, couldn't we start all over again? I mean, go back and begin from the beginning.
I suppose we could try.
Please, John.
All right. Oh, I love to be alone in the country.
John.
Yes?
I'm with you.
I love to be alone in the country.
But John, you...
I've got a viper in this box, you know.
Really? Good gracious me.
Oh, yes. It's not an asp.
Oh, good.
Looks rather like one, but it's not one. No, I wouldn't have an asp.
No, I suppose not.
Some people can't tell the difference between a viper and an asp. More fool them, I say.
Yes. Right.
Q. Cleopatra had an aspire.
Yes, well, I'm glad of that.
I don't want one either. No, I'd rather have a viper myself.
Yes, well, that's all right then, isn't it?
But it's not that they're cheaper to run, because if anything, a viper is more voracious than the asp. My viper eats like a horse.
Like a horse, eh?
Yes, I'd like a horse. I could do with horse. Well, nothing against horses. But mind you, I could never get a horse into a little box like this.
Yes, that would be a bit difficult.
No, no. You couldn't cram a horse into a little box like that. It's not a horse box. A viper, yes, but a horse, no.
I realise that.
But it's just about right for a viper, this box. Or an asp.
Yes, yes, quite, quite.
It's no good for a fish. Because you'd have all the water seeping through in no time. It's only cardboard, you see. It's not waterproof.
Yes, I see.
Oh, no. They haven't waterproofed cardboard yet. Or if they have, they haven't told me. Or if they've told me, I've forgotten one of the two. So it's no good for a fish. I wish it was, but it isn't. So there it is. It's no good for a fish. I haven't got a toad in here, if that's what you're thinking. You wouldn't catch me with a toad. I can't abide toads. Ugh. Vipers devour toads, I'm glad to say. Serpents hear through their jaws, you know. It's the bone structure that does it. Oh, yes, there's no doubt about that. Oh, good gracious, yes, it is the bone structure.
Yes, well, I suppose it would be.
I've got a bee in here. I don't know why you think I've got a bee in here. There's no bee in my box. You have a listen. You'd soon hear it buzzing if there was. You can't hear no bee, can you?
I quite believe you. No thanks.
No fangs? There's no fangs on a bee, if that's what you mean. I've never seen a bee with fangs. Vipers have fangs. They're very fangy creatures, so are asps.
I said no thanks, not fangs.
Not fangs, no, not fangs. No, not fangs. No, bees never have fangs. You'll find they sting, but they never bite. No, serpents bite and bees sting. That is the way you tell the difference between a bee and a serpent.
Yes.
I haven't got a stoat in here, if that's what you're thinking. Some people think I've got a stoat in here. They are completely wrong. I haven't got a stoat in here, not by a long chalk. I can't say I fancy stoats, neither. I'd rather have a viper. They're easier to rear. Oh, yes, they're easier to rear, all right. Need you ask?
I'm trying to read the paper. Would you please be quiet?
Bees aren't quiet, bees buzz. But vipers are quiet. Listen, there's no noise from my viper, is there? Eh? You can't hear any noise from my viper, can you?
I wish you'd shut up.
Oh, yes, shut up, all right. Don't worry, you wouldn't catch me letting a viper loose. Oh, no. Where are you going?
I'm moving, if you don't mind.
Why? I don't see where you want to go. There's plenty of room in here. It's not as though it's an ass.
If you must know, I'm finding your conversation a bit of a bore.
Bore? Was that a bore you said?
Yes, bore. B-O-R-E, bore.
There's no bore in my box. I don't know why you should have thought I got a bore in here. I haven't got a bore in this box. Good gracious, no. I can't abide bores. It's a viper, all right. It's not an ass.
Good evening. I want to talk to you tonight about the bright star that you can see on the eastern horizon at about 10:30 any evening this month. Now, this star is called Regella. Regella. It is at the moment one of the brightest stars in the sky. In fact, it's just over 35,000 times as bright as an ordinary 40-watt bulb. Now, Regella is also a very big star. 365 million miles in diameter. Or, to put it another way, if you imagine that this orange was as big as the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral, then Rogella is 286 million times the size of Waterloo Station. And to give you some idea of how large 286 million is, 20 people dotting continuously at a rate of 3 1/4 dots per second for 4 months and 3 weeks would fill 2 warehouses with exercise books. Now, as well as being so bright and so big, Rogella is also a very long way away. 412 light years, or the same distance that an ordinary white rhinoceros running at an average speed of 22 miles an hour would travel if he or she ran for 286 million years, or 2 1/4 hundred thousand billion times the width of a canary's wing. So much for Rogella. Next week, I shall be showing you how to make what we scientists call a lemon meringue pie. Written in 1962. And it sounds like it.
Oh, I think it's wonderful.
Very good.
Do you subconsciously find yourself doing David Frost when you do that?
No, he got that voice from me.
Ah, there you go.
And that, of course, was John Cleese, recorded right here in the KCRW studios last, I think it was in June, when he was promoting A Fish Called Wanda, his marvelous motion picture. And let's see, going backwards, before that, that was Rogella by John Cleese. Before that, we heard Not an Asp, a piece performed by Kenneth Williams, which was written by Peter Cook for a very early review called Pieces of Eight. I think that was like early to mid-60s, about 64 or so. And before that, we heard a piece from, I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Also written and performed by John Cleese, called John and Mary with Joe Kendall. And then we heard the Cambridge Circus, the undergraduate review in Cambridge that had enough success that prompted them to come over and do Broadway and the Ed Sullivan Show. I'd love to.